Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, February 6th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Jesse Snyder will be here to highlight this Saturday's best bridal fair and bazaar. We'll hear about Juno resident Denali Shiven's appearance on the television program Chopped Junior. And we'll get an update on the police department's activities with Chief Bryce Johnson. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local, on a Juno afternoon. Currently 32 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers say a repeal of the Affordable Care Act would have harmful impacts on the health care of Native Americans. They worry it would abolish the Indian Health Care Improvement Act. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The IHCIA was permanently reauthorized in 2010 when the Affordable Care Act went into effect. It provides coverage for more than 2 million tribal members nationwide. Now, some lawmakers are concerned about the overlap between the Affordable Care Act and the Indian Health Care Act. Democratic Arizona Congressman Tom O'Halloran recently authored a letter to Speaker of the House Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. He wrote that the federal government is legally obligated to provide tribal health care, and a repeal could defund vital programs.
There's treaties that have been signed. There's trust obligations that are part of the whole process, and those trust obligations clearly identify the responsibility of the federal government to deal with the health care issues and educational issues and some other issues of Native American tribes.
The Indian Health Care Act gives tribal members access to care in rural areas, along with substance abuse and mental health programs. It also expands health care for Native American veterans. The National Indian Health Board has also urged congressional leaders to keep the IHCIA intact. The law currently has broad support in Congress. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
New Mexico tribes honored the Standing Rock Sioux tribe on Friday at the New Mexico Legislature in Santa Fe. Tribal leaders and members of the Native American community welcomed Standing Rock Councilman Robert Taken Alive. Taken Alive says his message is unity, peace, and prayer, and thanked those in attendance for supporting his tribe's fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline Project in North Dakota.
I feel that strength through their prayers and the strength of their tribal people when they came together today. So, and it shows the federal government that the tribes, yes, although we have different languages, different cultures, we have prayer. So, and that brought us together to begin this, and it brought us together again today. So I'm humbled.
Two Native American state lawmakers introduced a memorial bill which shows support of New Mexico's 23 tribes. The bill also calls on the Trump administration to take steps to halt the Dakota Access Pipeline and calls for tribal consultation on infrastructure projects and to protect tribal lands and resources. Copies of the bill and a letter signed by New Mexico tribal leaders are being sent to Washington. Meanwhile, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's chief of police has been appointed to a law enforcement commission in South Dakota. As Jim Kent reports, the position gives the chief the opportunity to give input on training and certification issues for tribal and non-tribal officers in the state.
The commission is made up of 11 officials from across South Dakota, including representatives from the South Dakota Highway Patrol, county sheriff's offices, local police departments, and the FBI. South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley asked the state legislature to include a tribal law enforcement officer on the commission when he first came into office.
We need to make sure that tribal folks are having a say in the certification and training of our law enforcement officers.
Marty Jackley says Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Police Chief David Lawrence was chosen for the position because of his 27 years of law enforcement experience with the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
He's an individual that has earned tremendous respect from the communities that he protects, as well as his fellow officers.
David Lawrence's vote on the South Dakota Law Enforcement Officers Standard and Training Commission will carry the same weight as that of the South Dakota Attorney General. As a result, says Jackley, he'll have an equal voice on what should be expected from all law enforcement officers in the state. I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tours Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 6th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Jessie Snyder, and she's going to be telling us about this Saturday's Best Bridal Fair and Bazaar at the Mendenhall Mall. Welcome to the show, Jessie.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Let's start with the event. What is the Best Bridal Fair and Bazaar?
Well, the Bridal Fair is something I started a couple years ago to help brides, Juno brides, contact different Juno vendors. So they'll meet some photographers, a caterer, some artists, at-home vendors, and they'll be able to meet with me, a wedding planner, to help them figure out things they need for their wedding. And it will be at the Mendenhall Mall in the Old Library this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay. So like you said, you are an events planner, a wedding planner specifically, would you say? Or
I do events. I've done more weddings because I love love. And so I like seeing people on their happiest day and helping them get through, which is also their most stressful day. I like taking the stress off of them so that they can enjoy the love that they share.
Okay, and so like you said, this Saturday at the Mendenhall Mall in the Old Library from 11 to 4, you'll have all kinds of people there that can help people get through this day.
Yeah, we'll have DJ, photographer, photo booths. We have some makeup specialists, some health and wellness specialists. So if you want your bridal boot camp, we'll have some people there to help you with that.
And the bazaar too, right?
Yes, absolutely. The bridal bazaar is something that I'm starting this year. It's sort of like the ski swap, but it's for former Juno brides to pass on their, you know, 100 chair covers or 500 chair sashes or whatever. So come and hopefully we'll have some brides say, I have a pile of stuff in my garage I want to get rid of.
How many... So we're coming into, I guess, wedding season in the summer.
Correct.
Almost, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, you have to start thinking about it now.
How many weddings would you guesstimate we have in Juneau in the summer?
I don't know because there are a lot of brides that come in off of the cruise ship. I know last June I was participated in about 20 events, one of which was my brother's. So there are a zillion weddings throughout the course of the summer.
Wow. What would you say that people don't think about when thinking about wedding planning? What's something that they often forget?
Well, they don't think about how stressful the day is. They think about, I have all these people to help me do everything, but if they don't have a coordinator, then they're the person who has to think about, all right, my mom is supposed to be picking up the flowers from here. My maid of honor is supposed to be picking up the cupcakes from here. And the DJ is supposed to be here, but he's not. Uh-oh, my hair appointment's right now. How do I get the DJ here? That's why you have a coordinator, so you don't have to think about all of those little details.
Okay, if somebody wanted to get in contact with you, what's the name of your business again?
I own Sunny Days Events and Creativations. And my phone number is 907-465-7022. You can also find me on Facebook, Sunny Days Events, or online at www.sunnydaysevents.com.
Okay, or you can go to this Saturday's Best Bridal Fair and Bazaar.
Absolutely.
And is there any cost to get in?
There is no cost for the brides to come meet some very wonderful vendors.
All right. Jessie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I just hope that any of those boyfriends that are out there thinking about getting engaged, maybe bring your future fiancés this Saturday.
All right. Thanks, Jessie.
Absolutely.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 6th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 13 minutes past the hour. And with me in the studio now is young chef Denali Shivens. Welcome to the show, Denali.
Hello. I'm really thankful that you have me here today.
Well, it's nice to have you here. So I understand that in October, you went to New York City and you recorded a show called Chopped Junior. Is that right?
Yeah, I was on Chopped Junior. It's a cooking show where there are three rounds and appetizer, entree, and dessert. And on each round, you have four mystery ingredients, and you have to cook a meal.
Okay, and so this show that you recorded in October actually plays tomorrow night. Is that right?
Yes, tomorrow at 8.
Okay, and that's on the Food Network, is that right?
The Network Channel, yes.
So can you tell us, like legally, can you give us a little preview of what you did, what your ingredients were, that kind of thing, or do we have to wait for it?
No, I cannot tell you, but you can come and see and watch the show at 8
okay.
tomorrow night.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. I bet a lot of our listeners will. When did you start cooking?
When I was one in preschool, we had like a thing where they would just say, put this in the pot. I don't remember much of it, but I was like, and then, yeah. And then when I was two, I'll admit, I used a mix, but it was my first cake by myself.
Okay.
I'll admit to using a mix.
We'll let you go since you were just two using a mix. Okay, keep going.
When I was four, this is gourmet. I stopped using mixes at this age. Don't worry. I won a cooking competition where you had to use real pumpkins, and then I made a pumpkin cake. I was the only kid there, so everyone else was grown up, so I feel kind of a big accomplishment by that. They couldn't have chosen me just because I'm a kid, because it's blind judging, so.
All right. What are a few of your favorite things to cook here in Juneau when you're at home?
I like making rhubarb tarts in the summer and spring, and baking. Okay, now for cooking, I kind of like making more meaty stuff. I'm not a vegetarian. But I do like stuff,
I see.
Yeah.
So your dad is here in the studio patiently waiting. Do you mind if I ask him a few questions too?
Not at all.
All right. So Sander Shivens, did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, absolutely.
So would you mind telling us a few of the things that Denali likes to cook? I'm sure he must cook for you guys all the time.
Oh, absolutely. He really took off, as he explained, making a lot of pies and cakes, and he really likes the sweet goods. But what's nice about him making meals is he likes to introduce berries and some sweetness from a natural ingredient into his meal. So he really is very good in that regard. And Danai, why don't you tell what you made for the White House contest?
Okay, the White House contest was the Healthy Lunchtime Challenge 2016. It's held in the White House, where 50 kids from each state come, and you have to make a meal. You don't make it in the White House, but you make it, and then that meal competes, and the White House chefs make the meals, and then they get tasted, and they're trying to make school lunches be more healthy and stuff. So I made a spinach fruit smoothie with a whole grain, not on the spinach fruit smoothie, but on the side, and though this is the main dish, so the main dish, a whole grain crepe with sour cream, red-tipped lettuce, panko halibut, and a tart blueberry sauce. That's a wrap, side of spinach fruit smoothie. And the spinach fruit smoothie was on the menu for the stuff, and only 10 people were picked to have one of their dishes be on the menu. So you win a round, then it's not actually a round, but you practically win another round. So
Danai was very excited to see when he got to the White House with the 50 other kids and one parent for each by one parent or guardian. So there was 100 people in the White House, and it was 100 green glasses with his smoothie on all the tables.
It was a good-looking green, not bad-looking. Trust me, it was a good-looking green. And, yeah.
Excellent.
On the White House picture, they have a historian thing. And in the very front cover, it has a picture of the meal. And the side, a spinach fruit smoothie. So, what a win-win.
Nice. So, remind us what grade you're in.
I'm in the fourth grade.
Okay, so it might be a little early to start thinking about your future too much.
Not but at all.
No, you are already thinking about it?
Yeah.
What are you thinking? Tell us.
I want to be a chef when I grow up. I want to have a famous restaurant. And I think that's all what I'm planning to get my income from. But I kind of want to start out being a waiter, so I know how hard it is to do that. So I know not to push the waiters too much when I'm the head chef.
Sounds like a great plan. Where are you planning on having your restaurant?
I do not know. I'm thinking about having it in Juneau, but then if a ton of people come, like they sail over the ocean just to come here, then Juneau would be overpopulated because of my restaurant, and I don't want that to happen.
It's a lot to think about for a fourth grader. What's one of your favorite ingredients to use here in Juneau, either from the ocean or from the mountains? You mentioned it a little bit. Are you a halibut guy, a salmon person? You like blueberries?
I do like halibut, but do not give me halibut cheeks because they're really stringy in my opinion. So I would say I'm thinking of a fruit that I like to cook with because I will put fruits like you can even make a barbecue sauce out of blackberries. I've done it before. My dad, if he wants to say anything about how that tasted.
Absolutely amazing.
And I guess I just like putting fruits. Okay, I'm going to go ahead with strawberries because you can import them into savory, sweet, in brunch, which is practically savory and sweet. And yeah.
Okay, how about one more question? If you had to give one of our listeners a very basic recipe that they should try, every Junoite should try, what might you recommend? Something easy for a beginner.
Depends what you think easy is.
How about, you decide.
Try just doing something simple, vegetarian or not. Just try incorporating berries to something savory because you can get a lot of fun out of it. And, yeah.
So one of the challenges we have with Denali, especially with the White House challenge, is that Denali does not use recipes. He does it all from head, and he really makes it up on the spot.
Not completely true. I will look at recipes so I know how to make something for the first time.
For inspiration.
So I know the first time you ever make a waffle, you're going to look at a waffle recipe, and that doesn't mean you're not going to change it. So I'll look at recipes. I'll spend hours looking at recipe books, not to follow the recipe, but just to get the idea. Like the first time I ever did a creme brulee, I wanted to know how to make your creme brulee. So I looked at how to do the cream and the sugar and stuff. And then I didn't follow the recipe, of course. Why would I do that? The first time I have my bread, I didn't follow a recipe. Why would I do that?
Okay. So you can't tell us what you made or if you won or not, but can you give us one thing to look for in tomorrow night's program?
You can look for, I am Denali Shivan, so you know my name in case try thinking I am one of the other contestants. I do not know if I'm allowed to say what their names are or not, so I'm going to be safe and not say it, but yeah.
Well, maybe we'll look for improvisation, what you did with your ingredients, and if you use berries or not, if they gave you any berries, among other things. Denali, this has been great. Sandra, thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
I'm 10 years old.
Fourth grade.
Well, I was just nine. I was nine when they filmed Chopped Junior, but my birthday
a quick thank you to
was December 27th, so.
Quick thank you to Nancy now.
And Sunshine on Air, I would like to thank Nancy, who has helped me do a ton of stuff. The first time I ever used a barbecue was with her. So much thanks to my father for not teaching me how to use a barbecue.
Always there for you, buddy.
What's Nancy's last name?
Hemingway. Nancy right. Hemingway. She's a brilliant cook. And also, I'd like to thank Chef Nell. He is the head chef at Salt. And he's really taken me under his wing. Not saying that I followed recipes, but I did have a lot of fun with him.
All right. Look for Denali Shivan's tomorrow night, Tuesday night, on Chopped Junior. It's at 8 p.m. Alaska time on the Food Network. Thanks for coming on the show, you two.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
This is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. I'm here to encourage you to take part in Juno's community-wide 17 YOK initiative by doing one kind act each day and once a week directing a kind act towards someone outside your normal circle. You can get more information on the Year of Kindness by visiting the Juno Police Department's Facebook page. Together, we make Juno a better place to live.
Speaking of the Juno Police Department and the Year of Kindness, now in the studio is Chief Bryce Johnson with our weekly check-in with the Juno Police Department. Welcome to the show, Chief Johnson.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I have to follow up a talent that you just had in here.
Right,
that was,
Denali
that was impressive.
Shivens, Chef Shivens?
Yes. I was listening to that. What an impressive young person. That was incredible.
Right. So we just heard about a Year of Kindness. How's that going?
It's going really well. You know, I think it succeeded any expectation that we had at all. Different organizations all over town have jumped in. I think this week, if I read right, one of the boxing clubs is taking their opportunity to do a surge of kindness. I thought that was really neat. We've had Aware do it, Lemon Creek, which I thought was just really neat that the Lemon Creek Correctional Facility would take a week to do it. I thought that was just incredibly neat. I think there's been a lot of really neat stuff happening in the schools. A lot of great stuff. We're very happy about it, happy to play our small part in it. And the community is a great community doing a lot of good things.
Remind us how it works. You just mentioned, I thought of it more of as an individual thing, but it sounds like it can be organizational too.
It is individual, but then there's a thing they call kindness surges. So different groups have picked weeks in which to really go out of their way and try to do something different that they don't normally do. And so we've had lots of organizations contact us and say, hey, we'd like to have a week and do a kindness surge. So it's kind of an opportunity for someone to go out of their way to do it a little more. But truly, it is just the way we act daily with each other, right? We ought to be just a little nicer to each other. What we find as police officers is when people stop just being kind to each other, that invites us to come and have to get into your business, and we don't want to do that. So if folks can get along just a little better with each other, it keeps us taking care of the bigger problems. And so for us, it's a great thing. And for the community, I think it's a good thing too.
And at its most basic level for an individual, is it a kind act per day or per week? Remind us how that works.
Whatever you can do is absolutely fantastic. We don't have quota boards. You don't have to check it off. You know, I think it's more of a way of thinking and a way of acting. This gives you a chance to think about it regularly. And one of the big parts of it is we all kind of get, at least I do, and as I've talked to people, other folks, we kind of get locked into our own little group of friends. And so we've asked, hey, every now and again, think about someone that's not in your little group of friends, someone that isn't just like you. Because there's an incredibly diverse set of folks here. No matter how you define diversity, we've got it here in Juno. And so reach out to someone that isn't just like you and do something kind for them, see how far that gets us.
Okay, so that's Year of Kindness 2017. I understand you're doing a lot of training here in February.
Yeah, keeping police trained is a big deal. And we have a 24/7 operation. It's a big undertaking to get officers trained. So the way we do it is we spend February, that's kind of our training surge, since we were just talking about surges. And so during this month, all of the officers will go through at least 40 hours of training, and they're doing a lot of different things. I don't know if you've heard of ALICE, that's the training they do in schools and things for what you've
seen. Remind us, though, what that acronym stands for.
I'm not going to get the acronym right for you, but that's for the active shooter response. So if someone comes in and does something bad in your school or the hospital or somewhere, that's how you're going to respond to it. We called it run, hide, fight. It's been known as that as well. So the police also have a way that we're going to engage that. It's called a rapid response, rapid deployment. And so we're training on that, practicing for if something were to happen in our community, so they're prepared and ready to do that. We're also trained on the what we call less than lethal responses. That would be things like a taser and pepper spray, our whole array of tools we have that are less than lethal. When I started in police work, they gave you a gun and a pair of handcuffs, and that's all you had. Now that's not the same. You've got all sorts of tools that give you a whole variety of options to do. So we're training on how to use those that are less than lethal. We are going to spend a day out at the range as well. It's important the officers train with their firearms, that they're proficient at it. They know when to shoot, when not to shoot, that they hit what they're trying to hit. So we'll spend a day out training out there. The law is always changing. Gosh, every day almost that law is changing these days. And so we're going to get a good legal update to keep the officers cutting edge what the law says. There was a video someone posted on Facebook. We had a pursuit in town where the officers were chasing someone. There's a video of a guy tried to run over one of my officers, and he dove out of the way in the median. A lot of people saw what the officer was trying to do was deploy what we call a stop stick. Vehicle pursuits are very, very dangerous for everyone involved, and so the stop stick is a tool that stops the car from running from me, and it makes it safer for everyone. So we're giving the officers training on how to deploy those stop sticks, how to do it safely.
And I've seen the chains they lay across roads. How does a stop stick work?
The chain is similar to that. So there's actually a chain attached to the stop stick. So you put the stick out in the road, and then the officer can get out of the road out to a safer location. What they found is people have learned that if officers are on the side of the road during these pursuits, they're deploying something like that, so folks that would want to do us harm actually train to try to hit the officer, and we've seen a number of officer deaths around the country trying to do that. And here we had a very close call where one of my officers came very close to being hit in that very scenario. So we want to make sure the officers are up on how to do that and make sure they're doing it safely. We don't want to get any of the officers hurt, and we want to protect the public, so we're doing some training on that. And then I know you're going to want to talk about about burglaries later on. So we're spending almost a full day doing crime scene investigation, which is something we constantly train on, how to respond to the crime scene, how to investigate the crime scene, what we're looking for in crime scene. So we're gonna spend almost a full day reviewing those concepts and getting everyone retrained and maybe give them a new idea about crime scene investigation. So that'll keep them all busy all month long, and training is important for law enforcement. We never get enough, but we do pretty good in Juneau.
Okay. Speaking of burglaries, how would you say the rate of burglaries are here in Juneau right now?
They're still high. The last hard numbers I had were from November of last year, 2016. So I don't have any statistics past November. I should have that soon. But up through November, they were up over 70% from the year before. So that is I don't want to call it a spike. That is it's a huge increase. And I did a pretty lengthy presentation at the Assembly Chambers on some of the causes of that, what was driving that, some things that people can do to help reduce the possibility of being burglarized. Also, some things the police department is doing, like geographic policing. Offender-based policing, some of our things we're doing to try to impact some of those property crimes. So if you have a free bit of time, you can still go to our Facebook page, and there's a whole community discussion on how to help those burglaries go down. But they're certainly still our challenge, and we're certainly still working on them.
Can you give us a few highlights just about the cause of this increase in burglaries?
So you have a lot of things taking place. One is you have nationwide opioid epidemic, and that's a nationwide epidemic, and we certainly have had it here in Juneau. And so property crime and drug crime are related. They certainly are. So you have an increase in drugs taking place, which will fuel some of the property crime. And then as a whole criminal justice system, we're going through a lot of transition right now. We had a fundamental criminal justice reform, which changed the law and what we could do.
SB 91.
And I've talked at length at that in public, and there's a lot of great, good ideas in SB 91 and a couple of things that made it a little harder for us. And so we had that change. At the same time, you have reductions at the district attorney's offices statewide, reductions at Department of Corrections. So at the same time, you have this opioid epidemic. You also have all these other factors going on, and that's helped drive this increase. And it's not just burglaries; it's property crime in general is up. But we're taking the tools we have, and we're really trying to work on it. I think we'll see progress over time. As I look at the system we have in place, what we're supposed to do, I don't think we're going to knock it down by 75% over the next year. I think we're about where we're going to be for a little bit, but over time, as new things come online that go along with criminal justice reform, I think we'll whittle that back down. But that's certainly our challenge right now.
Okay, it seems like on our community's radar right now too is homelessness, and A lot of people are talking about that. How does that affect you guys?
Homelessness, not so much. So what I mean by that is homelessness isn't a crime, and it never has been, nor do we want it to be. And so we try to partner with other community agencies to try to help people get into the services that are out there for them. We work pretty closely with the Glory Hole, pretty closely with other agencies that are trying to provide service, JAMI, things like that, AWARE. The goal is to get people into housing. There are criminals that do criminal things, and they will sometimes hide in the homeless population and use the homeless population as sort of a cover for the bad things they're doing. And we want to weed those folks out and get them charged with whatever crime they're committing. But they'll usually hide in that homeless population. Then there are some public order things that occur when you have a large homeless population, especially if they're on the street. And so those are some public order things that we continue to try to work on to help downtown be a prosperous area. But the goal, I think all of our goal, is to help folks get into a place they can stay, a place where they're safe. That takes care of both of our problems.
Okay. What's the best way to communicate with a police department these days?
It depends on what you're trying to communicate. So if you have a crime, something in progress, something, you have an emergency, it's still the old-fashioned 911. If it's not an emergency but you need an officer to respond, you can call our business line. We have set up some new email addresses. So if there's information you want to share with us, we have this ongoing problem at this trailhead, there's often cars there, and you want to share some information, you think there's bad stuff happening, you can send an email to us. If you're in the downtown, if it's in the downtown area, it's downtown@junopolice.com. If you're on Douglas Island, it's douglasisland@junopolice.com. Lemon Creek is lemoncreek@junopolice.com. And then the valley is divided between East and West Valley. And if it's on the east side, it's eastvalley@junopolice.com and westvalley@junopolice.com. And so the city's been split up into those five areas for the officers to be kind of beat officers and take care of problems. So if you have information you just want to share with the police officers, you can utilize that email to communicate with them as well.
This might be a silly question, but it seems like everyone has cell phones from different area codes these days. What happens when somebody dials 911 from an out-of-state area code?
So the first thing the dispatcher will ask you is, what is your emergency? And then they'll ask you for a location. So unlike a landline, when you call in a landline, it will usually tell us where that landline is at. The cell phones don't work that way, even if it's a 907 area code. We may not know exactly where you're at when you first call. We do have the ability to ping that cell phone if we need to, and there's some rules about how we do that. And we use that occasionally, especially people will call us up. They're lost. They don't know where they are, and we can do that. So when you call us, if you know generally where you're at when you call 911, that will help us out quite a bit, especially if you're calling from a cell phone.
Okay, then you mentioned for non-emergency stuff, your business line. Will you remind us what that is?
You caught me right now. No, I won't. Forgive me.
I never
call our business line.
I bet it's on your Facebook page.
It is. Or, and it's on our website. And I'm going to get yelled at as soon as I get back to the department. They're going to say, what are you talking about?
JunoPolice.org, right?
JunoPolice.com, where that's at.
Or .com, excuse me, yeah. And then, again, these regional email addresses, downtown@junopolice.com.
Uh-huh.
Douglas@junopolice.com.
Douglas Island. Uh-huh.
Got it. And Lemon Creek at JunoPolice.com.
East Valley and West Valley at JunoPolice.com.
Is there an out the road yet?
Out the road's part of so yeah, if you're out the road, you'd use West Valley at JunoPolice.com. Yeah. And if you're out Thane, you'd use downtown@JunoPolice.com. That'll go to the officers responsible
to
for
Thane.
Your area. Yep.
And again, those are for sort of ongoing questions.
That's kind of community-oriented policing, right? We have this problem in our name. If you need a police officer right now or you need to report a crime, please don't use those email addresses. Call 911, call. We'll get an officer out there. But often people just want to share information. We've got this problem we're seeing in our neighborhood. We want to share it with an officer. So if they can put that in that email, the officers will follow up on that. They may get back a hold of you, ask you some follow-up questions. It's a way to increase the sharing of information between the community and the police officers, which can help impact some of this property crime.
Okay. Chief Johnson, anything else you want to communicate today?
just you know, make sure you're locking your doors, keeping your stuff inside. Please don't leave bikes or anything of value that you have out. Don't leave valuables in your car. You should assume if you leave a valuable in your car, you're telling everybody you don't care about it. Unfortunately, someone will come around and take it. So if you can help us out by making it harder for someone to steal your stuff, that would be great.
Okay, I think I found the phone numbers. 586-0600. Does that sound right?
That is accurate. That is it, yeah.
All right, 586-0600.
You saved the day.
That's why you... line.
You know, that's why you're a professional doing what you do, because you can save your guest who's on the air with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief Johnson.
The person that had...
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 6th of February, 2017. It's the birthday of the paleoanthropologist Mary Douglas Leakey, born in London 1913, married Louis Leakey, the anthropologist, and together they worked in Tanzania, where they discovered the fossilized bones of early, early humankind. 1937, on this day, John Steinbeck's novella of Mice and Men was published. He wrote it when he and his wife Carol were living in his family's vacation cottage near Monterey Bay, California. Never meant for year-round living, but he built a fireplace, closed off the porch, and they made do. His wife worked as a secretary, and Steinbeck's parents sent him an allowance of $25 a month. He wanted to write in a new style, more like a play than a novel, a book that was tightly plotted and was heavy on dialogue, ready to be adapted to the stage, about two farm workers, George and Lenny. Lenny, who's big and strong and not too bright, George, small and smart, who looks out for Lenny. Steinbeck had finished most of the book when his new puppy chewed up half the manuscript. He did not have a copy, and so he had to reconstruct it. Steinbeck said, "I was pretty mad, but the dog may have been acting critically." The book came out on this day in 1937. It got great reviews and became a big success. It's the birthday of the lexicographer Eric Partridge, born near Gisborne, New Zealand, 1894, who wrote books like A Dictionary of Slang and Unconventional English and A Dictionary of the Underworld. And it's the birthday of Babe Ruth, George Herman Ruth, Baltimore, Maryland, 1895. His parents operated a tavern. He almost never saw them, and when he was seven, they took him to an orphanage, and they left him there. And there he learned how to play baseball. He was signed by the Baltimore Orioles, who traded him to the Boston Red Sox in 1914. He was a star pitcher, but hit a record 29 home runs in the 1919 season, and the next year the Red Sox traded him to the New York Yankees, where the next year he hit 54 home runs. In 1929, Babe Ruth signed a contract for $80,000 a year, more than the President of the United States, Herbert Hoover, and Babe Ruth said, "Why not? I had a better year than he did." Here's a poem for today by June Robertson by Holy Ghost. The congregation sang off key, the priest was rambling, the paint was peeling in the sacristy. A wayward pigeon trapped in the church flew wildly around for a while and then flew toward a stained glass window, but it didn't look like reality. The ushers yawned, the dollar bills drifted lazily out of the collection baskets, and a child in the front row began to cry. Suddenly, the pigeon flew down low, swooping over the heads of the faithful, like the Holy Ghost descending at Pentecost. Everyone took it to be a sign. Everyone wants so badly to believe. You can survive anything if you know that someone is looking out for you. But the sky outside the stained glass window, doesn't it look like home? The poem Holy Ghost by June Robertson Bysshe from Fatherless Women, published by Cape Cod Literary Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
If you'd like to keep up with the variety of activities, people, and events in the capital city, you'll want to tune into a Juneau Afternoon. Find out about concerts, meetings, events, classes, and speakers that add vitality to our community. Get to know your fellow residents. Plan your schedule, learn what's going on and how you can be involved, or be a part of the program by being a guest and passing the word about what you're up to. A Juneau Afternoon, weekdays live at 3 on KTUO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand via ktuo.org.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, February 6th. It's about 9 minutes until the top of the hour.
This is Bird Note. A listener recently wrote us, years ago, some of the birds at my feeder were the rufous-sided towhee, Oregon junco, and red-shafted flicker. But I can't find them in my current field guides. They're gone, and so are the marsh hawk and sparrow hawk. Well, the listener's right. Some of these long, familiar bird names have passed into history. The study of birds, like any science, remains a work in progress. New findings about birds' DNA or other attributes bring changes in classification of species, which often result in new names. Take the rufous-sided towhee, found across North America. Differences between its western and eastern forms, plumage, songs, genetics, brought an official split into two distinct species, the spotted towhee in the west. The eastern towhee in the east. The red-shafted flicker, on the other hand, was lumped with the yellow-shafted flicker because so many hybrids were found. Now they all fly from tree to tree as the northern flicker. But where have the marsh hawk and sparrow hawk gone? Check your field guide for the northern harrier and the American kestrel. Learn more at birdnote.org.
before the advent of reality.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, featuring the new flagship cafe and bakery located at 130 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at heritagecoffee.com.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, we'll get an update on library activities. We'll talk about Perseverance Theater's current production, They Don't Talk Back. We'll learn about the second Shape Note workshop Saturday, February 11th. And Kelly Hansen, school counselor at Floyd Dryden Middle School, will be here to talk about the Kindness Campaign and the Think Kindness Award. And we'll hear Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 on KTOO, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and on demand via KTOO.org. Let's take a look at the weather here. Currently 32 degrees at the Juneau Airport. And for tonight, the forecast calls for mostly clear skies with a low around 17. And tomorrow, Tuesday, the forecast calls for sunny skies with a high near 26 degrees. And it looks like on Wednesday we get our first chance of precip. 50% chance of snow after 9 a.m. Mostly sunny with a high near 28. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon.